Hey everybody, it's Rachel Pishtek from Irrational Take with Rachel Pishtek. Obviously, you clicked on the episode and you're expecting me. Actually, maybe not, because I have taken forever to create a new episode, and I just wanted to say before we get started here, so sorry for this hiatus. I promise I'm back. I am going to try and stay as close to my weekly podcast as much as possible. And I also wanted to say thank you to all of the great feedback that I've been getting for people. Shout out to Aaron Smith, who I met in Madoc in July at a wedding. If you're listening right now, Aaron, hi. Thanks so much for chatting with me about the podcast. And also thanks for all the great feedback, you guys. I've had over 100 downloads on my episodes. The first one getting over 100 downloads. So that's crazy. I can't believe people want to listen to me talk. But yeah, I just wanted to say I'm sorry for being gone so long, and let's get into it. Also, I'm going to be trying a little bit of a different format. I'm still going to be going through all the topics that I have traditionally been covering, but I'm going to try and be a little bit more candid with you guys. So I'm not going to sound as scripted as I usually do, and let me know if you like that better, what I should stick to. I think to keep frequency and to keep listenership, staying more candid is probably a better idea. So here we go. Let's get into it. Thanks, guys. Welcome back to Irrational Take with Rachel Pishtek. Spoiler alert, I'm Rachel Pishtek, a podcast where we break down stories in entertainment, politics, and crap that you just can't believe happened, usually in Florida. Today we'll be discussing the reclamations of reality stars, the passing of U.S. Senator John McCain, and we're actually going to be talking about some crazy crap in Florida. All of that and more on today's episode of Irrational Take. So as usual, today's first story is going to be in the entertainment realm. And before I really get into it, I just want to say that I consume an atrocious, obnoxious, some might say disgusting and unbearable amount of reality television on a weekly basis, on a daily basis. I have this absolute Rolodex, internal Rolodex of useless knowledge about the Kardashians and the Real Housewives and The Hills and all these other reality shows that people watch. But this article really kind of, it was really cool to me because it's something that I'm interested in as somebody who loves reality TV, but also real human behavior. And it's by E! Online writer Billy Nillis, who wrote this article about the reclamation of the reputation of reality programs and reality stars. And before I get into it, I just want to say to E! Online, I know you're listening, VPs of importance at NBC Universal and the E! Network, chill out on the ads on your website. Chill out on the pop-ups. You're owned by Universal. You're making bank. Everyone's watching the Kardashians. So just relax. Like, we can live without the ads. You're still going to get revenue from all of these people that you're promoting. You're probably the most trusted entertainment news source. Celebrities come to you with statements more than any other outlet, at least that I follow, which is a lot, and it's obnoxious, and I should probably chill out as well. But the ads, you can take a break. Okay. Now that I've said that to E, I know you're listening. Shout out to you guys. This was a really interesting article, and I think that all of us know at least one reality show villain. Whether or not we watch reality shows, we can name probably at least one villain. For me, the first reality show villain that I ever became aware of was Trish Schneider. From The Bachelor Season 5, which aired when I was like in 5th or 6th grade. And the reason I started watching it was because I've since really not paid attention to The Bachelor. Like, I don't watch the 4-hour mandatory episodes throughout the week. I follow all of my friends on Twitter, so I get tidbits that way. And Ellen does a really great recap with writers for her show that I watch occasionally. And I'm always kind of, you know, you see through Instagram and whatever. So I'm always aware of what's happening on The Bachelor, but I don't watch the obnoxious amount of content that they produce every single week on ABC surrounding it. And Chris Harrison kind of bothers me. But that's beside the point. But I became aware of Trish because my really good friend Morgan Matichek, if you're listening, hi Morgan, love you. She really is the queen of Bachelor Nation and has been since probably 2002, if not 2005 and above and beyond. And I remember watching Trish, and she was this gorgeous leggy brunette with this really cute and trendy short haircut, just like this classic beauty. And she was just like, I don't even know how to describe her other than the worst. She was very cutting and very conniving when it came to the other contestants. And she was known in Bachelor Nation for being a villain because after she was eliminated, like, she didn't get a rose at the end of the episode. She came back and sabotaged a one-on-one date by showing up to Bachelor Jesse's one-on-one date and refusing to leave. So that was the first time I've ever been aware of a reality show villain. Since then, we've had several. Corinne from The Bachelor, Chad from The Bachelorette, Mike The Situation, who I'm going to be talking about a lot, from Jersey Shore, Spencer and Heidi Pratt, a bunch of different people. And Camille Grammer as well, who is also a really good example of a reality show quote-unquote villain who has since come back and reclaimed themselves and their reputation. All these stars that I mentioned, I don't know what Trish is up to these days. I hope she's doing well. She was really into the idea of marrying a football player. Like, she really wanted to marry Jesse Palmer, which she didn't. So I hope you at least got, like, a Canadian football player or something. I hope you married a football player, Trish. I really, really do. I hope you're happy in life. but these stars, they have this in common that they started out being these obnoxious and some might even say evil characters. And since they've really captivated audiences in a really positive way, like I said before, I think a really good example of this is Mike, The Situation from Jersey Shore. And Mike on Jersey Shore was a very polarizing character. He was very, very funny. Like, everything he said in his confessionals and on the show was very humorous. He has a lot of great gifts. If you look through Giphy, he has a lot of really great gifts of reaction faces, things like that. He ran into walls. He has said a lot of funny things. It seemed that he had the bones of something salvageable when it came to being a decent person on the original run of Jersey Shore. But overall, he was kind of seen as just a jerk. He dominated women. He loved bringing home several women at a time and you know, like, filing through which one was the hottest and which ones were actually ugly once he saw them in the light of day, which is really unfortunate and really kind of disgusting. So the original run, he was always kind of known as being the bad guy. And then it was later, after the original run of Jersey Shore finished, people realized his vulnerabilities. For instance, one, he's gone through a lot of legal trouble because he had a business, a tanning salon, that he kind of capitalized on once he got plummeted to fame from Jersey Shore. He was found guilty of tax evasion. Actually, I shouldn't say that he was found guilty because I don't know all of the full details of the court situation for him. But he was convicted of tax evasion for this business. And that was really an eye-opening thing for him. And he also revealed that he had a very strong chemical dependency issue when it came to alcohol and prescription pills. And so he's gone through this whole sobriety process. I can't tell you how long he's been sober, but it's been kind of a remarkable amount of time. And since those two things kind of took over his life, he's made a drastic turn to become a better person. He is a very vocal ally for the LGBTQ community, which I don't think anybody ever would have guessed, seeing him on the original version of Jersey Shore. Not saying that he was homophobic or anything like that, but it didn't seem like that would ever be of interest to him. His brother did come out as a gay man within the last 5 years. So that has been a cause to him that's been very important. So he's really focused a lot of energy on that. And he's really focused a lot of energy on bettering himself and through his platform and following, bettering others, letting people know that even if you're the most macho man, it's okay to be vulnerable and it's okay to transform your life, because being a jerk is no way to live, and being dependent on chemicals and substances is also no way to live as well. So that's probably the biggest transformation that I've ever seen. And it's really interesting the way that the camera follows that, because if you think about the way that TV works and you think about the traditional interests of human beings, like from the beginning of time, there were gladiators that hunted down people in the Colosseum and murdered them in front of audiences that cheered, or people that were released into lions' dens and people cheered and watched, or people that witnessed hangings and cheered and watched. Like, it was, people love to watch disturbing things, and people love that feeling of being uncomfortable. I don't like blood. I don't like any of that stuff. My mom is an emergency room nurse, and my whole life people have asked me, are you gonna be a nurse like your mom? And I was always like, no, I prefer people in one piece. And working and helping with people in that are contained, their bodily fluids are contained inside of them. But in speaking in terms of human nature in general, over the course of history, that's always been something human beings have been interested in. And that's kind of transformed into what we see on reality programs, the conflict between different groups of people. In Jersey Shore, there's always that internal fight of someone's fighting against others. My wheelhouse is the Kardashians, and honestly, even bigger than that now in 2018 is the Real Housewives. I love the Real Housewives. I love coming home from a day of work and decompressing by watching elegant 50 plus year old women scream at each other over petty things. And I'm not ashamed to admit that. It just is something about it is just so fascinating to me and so interesting. I love the tea. I love the glamour. I love the hair. I love everything about it. And I love, I just love the Real Housewives. I really, really do. But getting back to my original point is that we love seeing tumultuous behavior. And like I said, it's rooted in that human need to see how far the human spirit can go and how far the human body can go. And upon that too, like, I think that there are so many, reclamations of people that are in reality shows, because we also love to see people rising from the ashes. How many motivational quotes can you think of? How many stories of people do we absolutely love? Like, I remember when I was growing up in school, it was very talked about by our guidance counselor, or in teenage and middle school age programming, about how Oprah got fired from her first reporting job and Michael Jordan didn't make his high school basketball team. And now obviously, Bill Gates dropped out of Harvard. And now we see that they're these self-made billionaires and they're so successful and they started out from such humble beginnings. We love seeing those stories as well. And it's just really interesting to me knowing how, having a vague knowledge of TV production, how audiences are so captivated by those stories, because I think what happens is, and I'm going to try and make a comparison into real life as well, it's really easy to maintain camera time by being a jerk, because it's so easy for TV networks and producers to sell that. That makes people want to turn in. When you see conflict, you're like, oh, I can't believe this. That's when you hear Chris Harrison going, this has never been seen before on The Bachelor. That is what they thrive off of. So it's really interesting to me too when these characters choose to turn a different page. Like Mike, who is talking very openly about his dirty laundry. And maybe that's a thing too. Like, you're really getting that full arc from him. And if you watch RuPaul's Drag Race, which I am also a huge fan of, I love drag, I love RuPaul, I love all of that. Even if you don't, if that's not an interest to you, a big component of the show is RuPaul and his co-host Michelle Visage telling these drag queens, you need to be vulnerable. If you want to last in this business, you need to be vulnerable and share your whole complete story. It's not just about being the villain. It's not just about being the good guy. People have a bullcrap meter. They really do. And if they're not believing you, they're not going to buy what you're selling. So it's really interesting to me when these people choose to turn that new leaf. And I'd like to know if that's because they think that audiences will not buy what they're selling if they're continuously evil. Because there are shows that I think people lose interest in. And this is just me talking, like Love and Hip Hop or Bad Girls Club, when it's constantly like evil, 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 poor behavior, and it just gets boring. Is it because they want to have an overlaying arch of their development as a character? Or is it because they genuinely want to become a better person and display who they really are? If you think about another reality show villain like Chad from The Bachelor, he was this absolute horrifying jerk that appeared to be on steroids. And then when he went on Celebrity Big Brother UK, he was like this teddy bear, this absolute just like gentle soul. And so I would like to know if it's all production, if it's some production and the personality that they're working with, the talent that they're working with, or what is motivating that. And when I think about it as a person in my real life, I tend to think about the people that I know that are kind of behaving in a similar way. Like, let's say a lot of them has been negative for a really long time. I like to try and get to the bottom of situations like that. Like, are you behaving this way because you want attention? Most of the time, I think that's what it is. That's, again, human nature. You're wanting attention, you're wanting to feel validated. And a lot of times, if somebody can't be completely in tune, maybe it's because they have substances in their life, maybe it's because they have other influences in their life. I can't think of any great examples, but usually the number one way for people to reach out to you is by acting out and overreacting. And so I would like to see the comparison between that and someone in real life. Obviously, what we're seeing as a viewer of reality programming is that a very 30,000 foot view and a very filtered view of who these people are as people. But I think if we can learn anything from this, it's that yes, the human brain tells us that in order to gain attention and in order to gain favor, it's to act out and speak our truth loudly and maybe fabricate our truth a little bit just to receive that validation. But then it's very possible to turn that around. So if you know anybody anyone in your life that's doing that, I would kind of try and direct them into that type of narrative. Like, hey, you clearly have a lot going on. I'm your friend, but please know that you are making yourself look like a complete and utter mess. So yeah, that's just something that this article was great. Like I said, it was written by Billy Nillis on E! Online, and I think everyone should check it out. And I'm really interested to know what you guys think about it. So now we're going to take more of a serious turn and talk about politics. And today's just topic has me very sad. And before I really get into it, I just want to say that I know that there are going to be some people that are listening to this that are very perturbed and upset with my decision to talk about the senator. The senator, John McCain, I know for a lot of people has said and done a lot of problematic things, in their opinion, throughout his tenure as a member of the United States Congress and as a presidential candidate. But I have always loved and respected him. I have not always agreed with him, but I think that the pros in his life definitely overturned a lot of the cons. Throughout his voter history and throughout his tenure of political involvement. And I would just like to say, he, regardless of what you think about him, made one of the largest sacrifices a U.S. citizen can make by serving in the U.S. military, and serving in the armed forces and running for Congress. And I think he has left a legacy of respecting one's country, being willing to give up everything for one's country. He was a prisoner of war, and he has gone through a lot in his life. And I think in the last few years of his life, he really went through more than anyone should have to go through, especially as a veteran, being openly disrespected by our sitting president, who everyone knows that I do not agree with. Not only as I don't agree with the open disrespect that our president showed toward Mr. McCain and his family, but he also went through cancer, which too many of us have a connection to in the United States and in this world. So he also left a legacy of what it means to be a fighter, as a prisoner of war, and as he left a legacy through his children, who are remarkable human beings and are contributing to the United States and to our society all the time. And I am going to openly say that I am a very big fan of Meghan McCain. I relate to her a lot on her stances in politics. I really appreciate her openness and honesty, being a conservative woman but still remaining an ally to people of color, an ally to LGBT rights. And she kind of transcends all of those things, and is a really great example for showing that politics aren't black and white or red and blue. You can be purple. I consider myself to be pretty purple when it comes to political issues. And I think she's a really good pillar. And I think her dad was a really great pillar in that he showed that you can overcome and remain irreverent when facing hard issues like this. And please be open to listening to this part of the podcast. If you don't agree with me, I totally understand. You can skip ahead. You can delete this. You can block me on Facebook, whatever you want. But it's really important for me to share this story. And before I get into it, also, like, please open your mind and your heart to this family right now. Senator John McCain was a prisoner of war during Vietnam. And I'm going to apologize. But the Vietnam War is something that I've always been really interested in and always been, like, I'm going to apologize because it kind of makes me emotional, because it was one of the first things, if not the first thing, that I ever witnessed my own dad being emotional about as an adult. My dad is in that same age group as the senator was, the age group that was living in this really bizarre time, both of my parents, bizarre time of transitioning from the 50s into the 60s into the 70s, and all of these things were changing. Their worlds were changing all in front of them at once, and they went through a lot of weird political transitions and a lot of cultural transitions that were really overwhelming, and you were seen in one light or the other, and there wasn't a lot of overlap in whether in who was believed to be a good person on either side. And I get emotional about Vietnam because I love this country so much. I've always vocalized how proud I am to be an American. And it's like an obnoxious level. It's always been something that's so important to me. But like, you guys, Vietnam veterans are the most and have been the most disrespected group of veterans that we've ever had. And it breaks my heart. They account for some of the most homeless people. They account for some of the most chemically dependent and the most that face mental health issues. And there are a lot of other factions of people who I'm very passionate about as well, that aren't being served as they should be. but I just can't imagine making the ultimate sacrifice by either being drafted into the military against my will or choosing to serve in the military and coming home and physically being spat on and cursed at and not given job opportunities and not being treated as a full member of society. And I'm saying this as somebody who is multiracial and a woman, and I have dealt with slurs and I've dealt with glances and I've dealt with predetermined judgments about me before. So I'm saying this as somebody who has been kind of, you know, I will never understand the degree of what it means to be a veteran, because luckily we have many, many people that are much braver than I in choosing to serve in the armed forces. But I just want to say that before I get into this. Okay, so please just be open to this family and their grief right now. I've seen a lot of tweets recently from people that I know and respect that have been kind of disgusting about the senator, about how people that they listen to and talk to, they can't believe that they would say such glowing things about somebody that did quote-unquote horrible things throughout their tenure as a politician. But he's no longer with us, and there's a family that he leaves behind, and there's a legacy that he leaves behind, and that deserves to be respected. So, and I am somebody, and I worked on the Obama campaign in 2012. Okay, like, I am a Democrat. I've said it before, I'll say it again. But I loved this man and everything that he stood for and his family. So yeah, we're gonna get into it. Hopefully I don't cry anymore. I can't stop picturing the image of Meghan McCain seeing her dad's coffin at the visitation and just losing it. And it was like one of the saddest things I've ever seen in my life. Like, I think every child who's lucky enough to have two parents or parents in general thinks about that moment and just absolutely dreads it and is stressed about it. And especially myself, I'm an only child, and so I think about when that moment will happen for me, and where am I gonna go, who am I gonna turn to. And I'm not trying to make this about me, even though I clearly am talking about myself just from my perspective. That is just like the most gut-wrenching thing I've seen in a really long time. So this article that I'm referencing and talking about is from Politico, and it was written by Aubrey Eliza Weaver, and she talks about the bipartisan Three Amigos, which consisted of Senator Joe Lieberman, Senator Lindsey Graham, and Senator John McCain. And she kind of just goes over the words of love and admiration that these two men that are still living had for Senator McCain. And it's just remarkable, and it's really, it shouldn't be, because we should all be able to look past a letter that comes before our name, either R or D, and still have the same level of respect for those people. Because the people that we should be electing into office should be respectable, kind, hardworking individuals, and we should be proud to have them serve us as the American public. And I have always been very open about the fact that my best friend, hi Ryan, that I turn to and that I talk to every single day is Republican. I mean, we don't agree on everything. We actually argue quite a bit about politics, but we always come into it knowing that both of our points of view are valid, and he has opened my eyes to a lot of things, and I know that if I've opened his eyes to a lot of things, we've both really evolved over the course of our almost 10-year friendship. When it came to politics, I came in like this, a flower child, and he came in like this, I don't know, pressed shirt from JCPenney. And we've both kind of turned into outfits from Banana Republic over the course of our friendship. And I really value that. And I really value him, and I love him, and I care for him. And that's how it should be. We shouldn't write off people in our lives because they're this or that. I've had so many people in my life tell me ask me how I can be friends with him. I've had so many people say, oh, I thought he was cool until I found out he was a Republican. And that's makes me want to throw up. Like, not all Republicans are bad. Not all Democrats are good, and vice versa. There's so much beyond those letters. There's so much beyond those colors. So this article really spoke to me, and like I mentioned before, it's on Politico, and everybody should go read it because they say such beautiful things about the senator. And Meghan McCain posted on Instagram, I think, or Twitter, I can't remember what platform, a picture with Senator Graham and Senator Lieberman saying, these two men will always be like uncles to me. And you can tell she had been through the ringer that day. And that just really, really, really touches my heart. And it really, really says a lot about how John McCain raised his children, especially if you see Meghan McCain on The View, and if you see their other children in the projects that they do across the country and across the world, I think it really speaks to the content of his character. And with that, I also want to say how amazing and how beautiful is it that so many political figures who differ in such fundamental beliefs, like Barack Obama, George W. Bush, and Joe Biden, they all spoke in some capacity over the course of the last few days in celebration of John McCain's life. They're all invited by the family to speak and say things about the senator. That also speaks such volumes. And I try to remain rational. Obviously, this is called a rational take. But it says a lot to me that those people were invited to his funeral to speak, but our current sitting president was not, because he has really never said anything positive about the senator. Ivanka and Jared Kushner did attend the funeral. They were invited by the family. And Senator Graham did confirm that both Ivanka and Jared have said very lovely things about the senator. I mean, obviously, they're not going to talk crap about him after he has died. But there have been so many people in this current administration who have criticized the senator for remaining steadfast in his beliefs and not immediately backing what the president has said or done. And we are in a place right now that is very critical when it comes to how we critique people or how we critique administrations or politicians, even just people in general. Because that's something that should never go away. We joke all the time about how we live in a society now where every kid deserves a trophy. I do not subscribe to that. I do not. I was raised in 4-H. You either got a blue ribbon, a red ribbon, a white ribbon, or a green ribbon, which was like participation. You were a loser. Like, I'm sorry. I'm just going to say it. I grew up in 4-H. I grew up in sports. I grew up taking piano lessons, which ended up being competitive in the festival system, music, you name it. You either win or you lose, or you're ranked. And we cannot continue to live in a world where if you critique someone or if you give some sort of feedback, you're completely destroyed. And I'll get more into this in a little bit, but I just want to say that I think it's crazy that the sitting president was not part of this funeral celebration per the request of the family. Like, that is the amount of damage that he has done. And again, I'm very vocal about not supporting the president. I respect the Oval Office. I respect the White House very, very, very much. But I do not agree with the president and his actions. Especially in this case, when it comes to just plain old simple human decency. And with that, I saw a photo on Facebook that one of my Facebook friends shared from, I think it might have been the Daily Mail, of a photo of John McCain and Aretha Franklin, like both photos of them kind of morphed together. And it said that America lost its heart and soul. And unfortunately, I think that could be true. Unless we all make a concerted effort to change our ways. I think not only in politics, but I'm noticing more and more in, you know, social media, in music, in athletics, we are just part, we're subscribing to what's called cancel culture. Like, if you see it on social media, it's like, oh, this person is canceled. Or we refuse to support this company because of this thing. Like, with the decision to have gender-free bathrooms and businesses. Oh, this store is canceled. We're so quick to not think about all of the ramifications of that. And we're noticing it in music almost simultaneously. If you're unaware, look up everybody who is on Eminem's list right now. Eminem just released this new album called Kamikaze, and he is airing out all of that dirty laundry. And all of these other rappers are just cutting his throat, like G-Eazy, Machine Gun Kelly. He calls out Lil Yachty. So we're just going through this period right now of, if you come for me, I will come for you even harder and I will destroy your life. Also, this year we saw the demise between Drake and Kanye West. We saw the Paul brothers, that was more so in 2017, but the Paul brothers releasing diss tracks against each other. They're YouTubers if you don't know who they are. I'm trying to think of other comparisons. The beauty community. There have been all of these beauty influencers that have just been going hard at one another. And it's becoming the norm. And I'm just kind of like, when are we going to retire this mentality that we need to obliterate the lives of other people? If you are doing something fundamentally wrong, yes, you should be called out. You should be told that what you're doing is not okay. And sometimes the only way to do that is by sharing with the public. But that needs to be like the last step and the last degree. And I think that as celebrities begin and politicians begin to be more and more influenced, like, we are constantly being influenced every second of every day because we are constantly on the internet for our job, for our own entertainment purposes. We're constantly being influenced by other people. And I think it's up to us to set that example of, okay, we might not fundamentally agree on things, we might not see eye to eye on something, but I can look past that and see who you are as a human being. And I don't want to say spare you, because that sounds so dramatic, but I think that's the kind of the degree that we're in. John McCain was a great American. And for a lot of people, he might not be seen that way. If you look at different things that he has done in his life politically, but he was a great American, as I mentioned at the top of this segment, because he sacrificed a lot for his country. He sacrificed a lot for his family. And he deserves to be respected as such, especially now that he's no longer living to defend himself. And that is nothing that a family should ever have to go through, is defending someone who has since passed, because they're already going through so much, and especially being lost to a disease as common, unfortunately, as cancer, and as debilitating as cancer. So I would just, the reason I want to talk about this is human decency dead? Did human decency die with Senator John McCain? I think it might have. I really do. I really, really do, unfortunately. And I challenge you to look past the beliefs of other people, to see who they are as a human being, eye to eye. Your blood is red. Underneath the surface, you have a lot more in common than I think you do. And if I can call Ryan Frazee my best friend, who I love and admire, even though sometimes he can't spell basic words, I think we can all find a way to get along. Okay, so this story 4 is literally so terrifying. We're actually going to be talking about Florida because this is where it took place. To keep it short, this is an article again from the Huffington Post strange news section, which really comes in clutch. It's very, very interesting. Everything that is being posted and being written about in that section of HuffPo. So it's called Massive Lizard Terrorizes Florida Family. So there's a 6 foot long lizard terrorizing a city block in Davie, Florida. The lizard weighs 100 to 150 pounds, and it's not an alligator. It's what's called an Asian water monitor. And I think when I saw the picture, I'd seen one before, like maybe in like a zoo or other pictures across the internet or something. Like, it looked familiar. And it looked terrifying and disgusting. And I just want to say right now, like, no hate to other parts of the world, but I would rather deal with the atrocious, bitter, cold winters and blizzards that I have in North Dakota than deal with creepy, crawly crap crawling around. Thinking about it, like, I like reptiles. I really like snakes a lot. I think they're really cool. I think they're really beautiful. But, like, lizards that are bigger than a gecko, do not miss me with that. Miss me with that. No. No, 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 no. Okay, so this family that it's been terrorizing has tried to contain the lizard in their garage, but it completely backfired when the monitor took the lizard, called the monitor, took a full-on sprint towards the homeowners who have small children between the ages 2 and 4, which would be easily devoured by this 100 to 150 pound animal. So they were trying really hard, and then they were just like, okay, we just gotta leave this thing alone and need to contact our state and city government. So the Florida Fish and Wildlife Department got involved, and they were unsuccessful. They couldn't even attract the lizard with rats or other bait or dead animals or anything like that. Like, this lizard was so wise to their ploy, so they couldn't. The people who are in charge of containing animals couldn't even contain this animal. So then they reached out to this guy named quote-unquote Trapper Mike. Only in Florida, people. Only in Florida. Only in Florida is that somebody's name or nickname. Who works for the Martin County Trapping and Removals and Wildlife Rescue, was put on the case, and he discussed some of the dangers of the beast, including this little fun fact. These animals mostly eat rotted flesh, so not only are their gums lined with razor-sharp teeth, but also parasites. So not only could they maul you, bite you, eat you, in the process of doing that, they would give you an incredibly terrible infection because they have actual maggots and parasites in their gums. So that's fun. And while it's illegal to own exotic creatures like this in Florida, this monitor, they found out his name is Bamboo, and his owner said, they found the owner, and he said he has three of these terrifying animals that live in his pool in his Florida home. And at the time that I'm recording this, Bamboo is yet to be captured. He's still harassing. Hopefully he hasn't done any damage. I really worry about those little kids. And it sounds like they're really, really fast and have really sharp teeth, like I said. And the parasites. I can't get past this parasite situation. Like, that is just disgusting. So if you live in Florida or know anybody that lives in Davie, Florida, tell them to be on the lookout for a horrifying beast. And I'm sure that's a usual thing in Florida. There's lots of horrifying beasts that live there. Alligators, Asian water monitors. I could make a really snarky comment about human beings, but I'm not going to because that's cruel. But Floridians, be careful. We're going to get into my two favorite segments, This Bothers Me and Don't Be an Idiot. But before I get into that, I want to revert people back to my Google form that I have out there on my Twitter page. If that is too complicated for you, feel free to text me or feel free to DM me and let me know what questions you might have that you want me to answer, and Don't Be an Idiot, or topics in This Bothers Me. There are a lot of things that bother me, though, so I probably would say keep it for Don't Be an Idiot. This week's This Bothers Me is, something that has bothered me for years and years and years, and I don't think I've really even talked about this with friends closest to me because it literally just gets my blood boiling thinking about it. It's about social media etiquette. And this will probably be social media etiquette as an overarching theme will probably be the topic of this bothers me quite frequently across the catalogs of this podcast and episodes of this podcast. But this is probably the number one takes the cake issue that I have with social media, in particular Facebook. Okay, are you ready? Are you sitting down? Are you ready to hear this? Stop posting about your non-life-threatening illnesses. Nobody cares. Not to say that people don't care about you and people want you to feel good, but like your general Facebook population of friends do not care that you have a sniffly nose or a sore throat or a headache. I'm sorry. The people closest to you, if you're texting and you're like, oh, I really don't feel good today. Oh no, what's wrong? Blah, blah, blah. Save that for texting. Save that. Like, don't even tweet about it. Don't you dare put it on your Snap story. Don't you even think about putting it on your Instagram story. That is just for like pretty things and funny things. Neither of which colds are. They're annoying. They're annoying for people who have them and even more annoying for people who don't and have to hear about yours. We don't care. Nobody cares. I mean, like I said, people care. Your mom, your dad, your grandparents, the people you're currently talking to, like your friends or your significant other. Yes, maybe mention them, your boss, like, oh, I'm not feeling the best today. But do not post about it on Facebook. And don't use, like, nobody is using the so-and-so is feeling this way. Like, if you're doing, like, so-and-so is feeling blessed because you just got married or you had a baby or your family surprised you and showed up at your door with a dozen cookies, yeah, you can use feeling blessed for, like, really remarkable moments like that, or feeling angry if somebody, like, stole your car or broke into your home, or feeling, I don't know. There's some feelings that you can get away with, but feeling sick and then talking about, I'm feeling sick today. I have a cold, and so I decided to go to the emergency room and waste all of the nurse's time. No. No. Quit it. Stop. Okay, also, you don't need to go on WebMD. If you have a sniffly nose, and you're like, oh, I feel gross. WebMD, blah, 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 sniffly nose. Oh, I have a brain tumor. No. No. Stay away from WebMD. Just go to bed earlier that night. Drink more water than you typically would. Take some Airborne twice a day. Just ride it out. If anything, drink some more water, get some more sleep. Try and eat a little bit healthier than you typically do. I cannot tell you how many friends I have on Facebook that I've had to mute because every day it's feeling sick for this reason, and explaining what is happening to them. I know too much about your mucus. I know too much about your bowel movements. I know too much about your health. If you are going through a traumatic, life-threatening disease, or someone in your family is, where it's to the point where you have like a caring bridge or a GoFundMe, and you need assistance financially and emotionally, go ahead, post all you want. I am here for you. I'm here to be a good neighbor. But if you have a cold and you are telling me every detail about your cold and how you're going to this place, and if you are looking for recommendations on Facebook, like, how can I cure my cold the quickest? Google it. Pinterest exists. Pinterest is 99% moms that are looking on how to heal their children of non-life-threatening diseases like colds and sinus infections. So do not come to Facebook with that. Enough. It is 2018. Enough. I just want to see your dogs. I want to see your successful recipes. I want to see your engagement pictures. I want to see your wedding photos. I want to see a picture of you and your dad on Father's Day. I want to see the 13th time that National Dog Day has happened in 2018. I do not care about your non-life-threatening illness, especially if it's a cold. Like I said, It's got me heated. It's got me going. It's so stupid. Quit doing it. Okay, that's enough. Next topic. Okay, so for this week's Don't Be an Idiot, we got a question via my Google form that I have pinned as my top tweet on my Twitter page, which is at Rachy Pishy, and I am at Rachy Pishy, RachyPishy, on all social media platforms. So if you feel so inclined and you don't follow me already, feel free to follow me. I don't know if this person is dragging me or genuinely asking me this question, but I'm going to run with I think that they're actually asking me. And it's a really good question, especially for people who are in my age group, from ages like 20 to 35, especially post-college. The question was, how do you make friends when you have so few? This is tough, and I actually talk about this quite a bit with people. I like to consider myself a person that has several friends. And I have learned in the last few years, especially after graduating college, that friendships, just like relationships, will benefit you based on your investment into them. I have a lot of friends that are scattered throughout the country now that I've graduated college. One of my best friends lives in Washington, D.C. One of my best friends lives in Kansas City, Missouri. I have other great friends that I studied abroad with that live across Europe and North America. I have several, like, really, really great close friends right here in Fargo-Moorhead, and we just have very conflicting schedules. But my biggest recommendation is to think about who you're surrounded by currently. Why are you wanting to make more friends? Is it because the friends you have now aren't of quality, or they're not nearby you? Like, think about, analyze the reasoning behind wanting to have and make more friends. Also, what are you interested in? I think a lot of really quality friendships come from different interests that you have. For instance, I've made really solid friends from church. I am pretty active in my faith community, and I've made friends that are other teachers in our youth programming, and we seem to have a lot in common when it comes to our philosophy and our faith, which is the cornerstone of my life. So I think that's a really great way to make friends. Also, friends, if you invest back into the investment portion, if you invest time and energy into them, it can become a fruitful friendship in that they will be apt to introduce you to other friends. And I have made a lot of really great quality friends this way. One of my very best friends named Hannah, I met her through our very great mutual friend Jordan, and Hannah and I have developed our own amazing and unique friendship. And by us including each other in each other's lives, we've introduced them to other people. So I think that's really where really strong friendships of quality stem. It all starts from investing time into caring about the people that you are already friends with. It is hard. It is hard to make friends as an adult, but be mindful that having a small circle of friends, of close friends of quality, is not a bad thing. We see on TV, like, even as adults, like, the value is placed a lot on being popular and being the name on everybody's lips and name recognition. But I think that is not necessarily the case. If you have fewer friends, there's less drama, hopefully, in your life, in your friend group. There is more quality conversations. There is more room for you to grow as people. Friendships and relationships in general are really, really tough when it comes to navigating bumps. And I would rather have a few great friends that I can navigate those bumps with than several friends where they're fair weather friends. I literally could cry again, but I've already cried once on this episode. Recently, I had an event in my life for my work, and I did not, honestly, I didn't ask anybody, except for maybe a smattering of people, if they wanted to contribute and help out at this event for my work. And it turned into being pretty much all of my friends that live in Fargo-Moorhead showing up for me and volunteering or being part of this. If you hear this buzzing, by the way, it's Ryan Frazee. Please stop texting me. It's just, they all showed up for me, and I feel like it's because I have been able to invest my time into their lives. Not tooting my own horn or patting myself on the back, which is another thing too. People want to be friends with people that are confident and know their ability and know their worth. So if you are exuding energy that makes you seem like you have a lot of emotional baggage, that's not the first person that I want to hang out with. I want to hang out with somebody who knows they have a lot to offer as a person and is secure in who they are as a human being and has the capacity to offer as well as receive emotional comfort and stability. There have been a lot of people in my life in the last year, specifically. It seems like every year since turning probably 23, I've had to prune the vine a little bit because I've realized that some friendships just will not work because we're not on the same level of emotional intelligence and not on the same level of emotional awareness. And when I say emotional intelligence, I mean, if you look up the Myers-Briggs or management, and I learned about emotional intelligence through management courses in college. If you look up wherever the term stemmed from, in some sort of management vernacular, that just means, it doesn't mean you have to be like this smart, emotionally intuitive savant, but knowing your adequacies as well as your inadequacies and being able to handle them well. Like, it's a big thing in management and it's a big thing in business, like being able to, and really all forms of the professional world, how you can best respond to criticism and how you can best respond to various situations that you encounter. And if somebody has an unbalanced emotional intelligence to you, it's probably when something happens in your life or in your friendship, it's probably safe to say that things aren't going to go the way you want it to. Let's say you have a higher emotional intelligence than your friend, and your friend comes to you with this crisis and you handle it that you feel is the best to your ability, but they don't think you were adequate in assisting them. That's probably going to result in the end of a friendship or create a major bump in your relationship. And that is something that has really happened to me over the course of the last 6 months. There was somebody in my life that I realized was not toxic because they're a bad person, but toxic in that I don't think I will at this point in our lives ever really be able to get through to them. And so to answer your question, like, how do you make friends when you have so few? Just invest in the friends that you have. It'll be fruitful. It will be meaningful. It'll lead to a much deeper friendship with the people that you have in your life. And it'll help you realize, like, what you value in a relationship with people. So, but, and if this question was intentionally to drag my life, you've succeeded. Just kidding. I am very, very passionate about all the friends that I have, and I love them so much. And I literally would not be alive if I didn't have them. They're my everything in this whole wide world. So if you're my friend and you're listening to this, which is probably true, everyone who listens to my podcast, I don't care who you are, you're automatically my friend. I love you. And I hope that I am being a good friend to you. And if I'm not, call a sister out. So yeah, that's friendship. So that's that, people. It's the end of the podcast, and we made it through, and I had so much fun recording this. I am kind of affirmed in my decision to make this a little bit more relaxed and talk a little bit more free-flowing. I hope I didn't sound too much like an idiot, and if I did, please let me know on my social media at Reggie Pishy or send me a text. I know in the last podcast the audio was all over the place, and I think by speaking this way and not worrying so much about sound and audio cues, I think that will hopefully resolve itself. If you notice technological things about the podcast, please let me know because I want to make this as audibly pleasing as possible. This is an audio format after all. So let me know what you think. If you think I'm an idiot and you want to guest host an episode, let me know. I would love to bounce ideas off of another person for an episode. If you have subjects that you would like for me to talk about, please, please, please let me know as well. And as always, thank you so much for listening. You guys are the real MVP, and I'm excited to build this podcast and hopefully learn more from you and be your friends. And yeah, make sure to take a deep breath today, and you're the best.